Welcome to episode number 14 of the Inside Ronnie podcast. Thanks for downloading the show again. Thanks for joining us. Big show coming up. We've got no guests this week because we've got a bit of breaking news. We've got a few listener questions that we've been overwhelmed with the last couple of weeks, so we thought it'd be a good opportunity to get into that. And we're going to be talking about a few things that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. So thanks for joining us. How are you, Brad?
A bit tired this week, actually, Brady. It's been a lot more. There's been a lot more early mornings compared to the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, Brad and I are back at work, grinding away on the full time bandwagon like Julian. What about you, Julian? How are you going?
Yeah, I'm just another normal person, mate. Just another normal human in the Western world.
Just chipping
continue
away.
Continue working.
How's shoe sales going down in Ballarat?
Very good, mate. Thank you. We've been surprisingly busy through some tough weather patches and the summer holidays in Ballarat tends not to be that busy, but we've had a good couple of months, so everyone's winning.
Good to hear. Brad Croker, talk us through your running week last week, probably the most impressive week. I said that at the start of last week's show, but you've gone and gone better again this week.
Yeah, and I ticked a few boxes. So start of the week was pretty light because I came off that long run with fast finish on the Sunday. So Monday, I just got out for 45 minutes. And I guess because of work now, my mornings are starting a little bit earlier and I'm not getting out to Mulligan's Flat. So I'm probably doing a little bit more on the roads just because I don't have the time to do it. So did 45 minutes Monday morning, around 4:20 pace. Then Tuesday morning, I did go out to Mulligan's and did just over an hour at 4:20s, 35 minutes in the afternoon with 6 10-second hill sprints. And then my first session for the week was Wednesday morning, and that was a monofartlek, which I was pretty happy with. Like, I don't tend to, like, the speed sessions in the morning, I never feel great for. Especially those first couple of 90-second efforts of mono. But as it turned out, I averaged 3:05s, which is probably only a couple of seconds per K off my best ever mono, which would have been in the afternoon, and felt pretty strong towards the back end. So that got me bang on 6.5K. So I was pretty much running, I think, just under 3-minute Ks for the efforts, and anywhere I guess from 3:15s to 3:20s for the float. So was happy to get that done.
Yeah, that's solid. Where's your line between like early and not early anymore? Like, you did that at what, 7 o'clock in the morning. When does it become like, you know, Saturday morning, you've had a bit of a sleep in? Is 8 a.m. okay for you? Because I know exactly what you mean. I hate grinding out fast sessions in the early.
I don't think it's necessarily the time of the morning. I think it's more how long it's been since I got out of bed.
Yeah.
So 7 a.m. is okay if I've been up at 4. But when I do this session, I would have got out of bed probably maybe 6 o'clock and had a coffee and a couple of pieces of toast. So if I'm starting a hard session less than an hour out of bed, it's probably a bit harder than I would have liked. But where I get encouragement out of those sessions is the perceived effort's a lot higher at the start of the session, but then once everything starts to warm up, you start to feel pretty good. And I was really happy with how I was able to close the session, even though I was working pretty hard. And then Thursday, we had a nice cool change come through Canberra. So I got out at 6 o'clock in the morning for 2 hours, and it was so nice. It was it would have been under 10 degrees, which, you know, when I'd been running in close to 20 a lot of mornings, it felt amazing. So I did 29K at 4:07s, but the heart rate was under 130 average for that run. So although the pace was quick, I guess heart rate was relatively low.
Who's called you out there in the comment section?
It's one of my best mates. It was one of my best men at my wedding. So he's got onto the Inside Running podcast bandwagon and was listening to Sean's interviews. So, and that's when I had to call him out and say, well, have a look at my heart rate. It wasn't actually that high. So anyway, he's training for Canberra Marathon at the moment. So then Friday was just an hour at 4:18s. And then my big session, which is probably like my big test session for the marathon, It was scheduled for 2x12K with a 1K float. So I went down to Lake Burley Griffin just because I thought I'd get a bit sick of running around Yerribee Pond, which is only 4K. Had to slightly change the course that I was going to do because they had a triathlon on, and I just didn't want to get caught up in people coming out of the swim or people on the run leg on the bike paths. So modified that a little bit, but it went, yeah, it went great. I felt really strong the whole way, and so first 12K was 39:30. So what's that, about 3:17s or so? Floated a kilometre in 3:36, and then ran about 39 flat for the second 12K, which, 3:15. So, yeah, and heart rate wasn't too bad. I think averaged 164 for the whole session. Practiced my drinks. I had a gel and 250 mils of water after 5K. I had 100 mils of sports drink diluted in, 250 mils of fluid at 10K, and then had a gel and 250 mils of water at 15K. And then that's all I had because my drinks lady, my lovely wife, Viv, she was riding the bike, but she fell off the bike at 19K. She was behind me at the time, and I didn't know she'd fallen off. And she then lost me. She didn't know where I went. So I pretty much ran the rest of the session then by myself. So all up, it was 25K in an hour 22, which is 3:17 average. So, yeah, I was really happy with that.
Yeah, let's take this one apart, Moose. Good session.
Yeah, good.
Good session.
Yeah.
First up is Viv, all right?
Yeah, she's all right. I was probably a bit harsh. I did give her a bit of a serve. Afterwards, just because I just didn't think it was that hard to stay on the bike, and she knew exactly where I was going, so I don't know how she didn't find me, but she's all right.
I love how you got nine comments rough on your Strava, and only one person asked if Viv was all right.
Yeah, no, she's all right, but I may have trouble getting her out next time.
Okay, that's the first question out of the way. The next question is this: marathon pace or what? 3:15s, 3:17s?
Nah, it's quicker than marathon pace. I still really think if my goal is 2:20, so I don't see the point in biting off more than you need to. So 70 minutes there will take, thereabouts for halfway, and then reassess after that.
So Bradley,
yes.
If your goal is 2:20, like this is what you think you can run on your best day. Yeah. That's what you're saying?
Well, that's my goal. So, like, who knows what shape I'm in, but I don't want to risk not breaking 2:20 by going 69 flat through halfway. I'm just not a big fan of the you need time up your sleeve in the marathon. I think coming from a track background, speed's not an issue. But the back end of the marathon's tough, so I'd prefer to feel as comfortable as possible through halfway, and then, hopefully be able to bring the times down a little bit in the second half, like you did in Berlin. To run 3:15s is not hard if you're feeling good. So I work on that factor, work on that theory, as opposed to getting a bit of time up my sleeve and then just having a gradual fade.
That's the way to do it, I reckon.
All right. You're letting off easy.
No. Like, isn't that exactly what you did at Berlin?
What are you saying, Julian? What was your question?
Well, I didn't get to my question. So my question is, you're running these workouts comfortably, right? They're pretty good indicators in my mind of what you could do on the day at the comfort level that you're doing them at, and by running 70 minutes for that first half, you're asking, like, from what I'm looking at and from an outside sort of perspective, saying you're going to undercut yourself. It's not like, yeah, it's great to run a negative split or an even split. I agree that's the way to go, but not if the first half is like so much further back than what your potential will allow. Because your goal might be 220. Every single person who's listening to this podcast, who's followed your training, telling me every day, I'm agreeing with them, Brad's going to run a fast marathon. You go out and run 70 or 70-30, like you mentioned the other day, and you're not going to run a 66.5 at the end to get like where we think you can run. I don't know.
Yeah, well, a couple of things to that. One, my PB is 2:24.09. So, like, first box to tick is break that. Second is, like, I'd probably happily, you know, quit running with a PB of under 2:20. Like, I don't care what it is. I don't care how far under 2:20. So, and this was my same mentality when I first broke 30 minutes for 10K. I pretty much just ran 3-minute Ks for as long as I could and then closed a bit faster over the last K. So, yeah, like, maybe I could run 2:18. But I would be stoked with 2:19.59. So,
I think it's the wrong mentality. Like, sub 2:20, it's a good time, yes, but it's just the only reason you're looking at it is because it's a nice even number.
Yeah, like, well, that's it's a milestone.
You go and run 2:20, and you'll go. Shit, that wasn't that hard. I guarantee it. You'll go, oh, there's minutes there. There is minutes there.
Does he need sub 2:20 before he does 2:18 though? Like, does he need that as a stepping stone kind of distance race?
No, he doesn't, because look at what I did. I went from 2:24 or 25 to 2:18. You don't need it. You don't All need right. a stepping stone.
Here's another thing. So that session I did on the weekend was 25K. There's still another 17K of running to do a marathon, and anything can happen over another 17 kilometres. I'll also point out that before Berlin, Brady ran 30K at 3:18s. So you'd say that, wow, that, you know, why you should run 2:17, Brady. Why don't you go? What you should go through in 68 in Berlin.
Yeah, well, then I went and ran 42K at 3:19. So, like, I pretty much just held on for another 12K.
So these sessions are great, but it doesn't mean that you can just jog 2:20. There's so much that happens.
This is where we have a different outlook, like, in my opinion, because when I do those workouts, if I did your workout yesterday and I felt like you did, that would give me a lot of confidence that I could do that on the day.
Yeah, look, I get confidence. You know, like, my last K was 3:09, but my legs, that session, my legs start to get heavy.
Like, you're in a training week.
Yeah.
You run around bloody Lake Canberra with people around and bloody footpaths and shit.
What if I went through 70 minutes and I ran 69 for the second half? Like, 2:19 flat, like, I'd be absolutely over the moon with that.
I like that. Yeah, do that.
Like, and I've got my doubts whether I can even do that. So,
Stop doubting yourself, Brad. You've got this, brother.
So then I did I did another 5K after that 25K. I did 20 minutes at 3:53s after that 25K at 3:17s. And then that afternoon I went out for 8.5K at 4:18s. So that was a 43.6K day. And then yesterday, being Sunday, I just ran 13K at 4:20s, and I was pretty heavy for the first half an hour, but then sort of loosened up. So the week was 151.7, so not massive, but you know, obviously one big session in there, a good monitor, and 2 hours midweek. So all good.
Good.
But thanks for your feedback, Julian.
I'll hammer you for the next. How long you got now?
It's less than 4 weeks now.
Oh, you still got 4 weeks.
It's 3 weeks. 3 weeks yesterday, wasn't it?
No, it's four weeks.
It's three weeks after mine.
So I've got one big week of training this week, and then I'll start to back off after this week.
I'm looking forward to moosing on the loose later on, Brad, if that's how loose he's getting for your weekly recap.
Yeah.
Could be a big show, listeners. Stay tuned.
You know, like back in the 80s, that is like the opposite mentality. They'd be doing these workouts going, I'm going to run 210 on the race day.
I still have way too much respect for the marathon, though.
Yeah, and I do too. And I've seen a lot of blokes fail, but I know you've done. You've paid respect to the race by the training you've done. That's what I've seen.
Yeah. I guess time will tell. 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Put it this way. The point I'm at the moment, I'm certainly going to, assuming I get to the start line. I'm going to be on the start line feeling like there's not much more I could have done right for this prep. So that's a good place to be.
But, Bradley, you just said we still have a month to go. So many people get injured in the last month. So don't, like...
Yeah, that's why my coach has been very conservative with this next coming week. I wanted to do a little bit more and he's just dialed it back a bit. So,
this is a danger week.
Yeah.
Brad, you said that's going to be... Did you say that was your test session, like your big session? Are you going to do something bigger than that, or is that it?
Not bigger than that extended marathon pace. So this week, my marathon-specific session is I've got 36K on Sunday, and between sort of 25 and 35K, I'm going to do 10K where I do 2K at marathon pace, around, so, you know, 3:19s or so, and then 500 metres... closer to 10K race pace. So I got that one off the moose, actually. So that's a bit of a moose special with just...
I didn't do it 2 weeks before my race, though. 36K.
No. You just did the 10K part as a session.
Brady just said you had 3 weeks from this past Sunday.
No, it was 4 weeks. So I've got 4 weeks to go.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good. 3 weeks is a good time. Yeah.
That session will be 3 weeks out. And... yeah, so it's going to be a hard 10K at the end of my long run with a few pace changes in there. So I'm interested to see how that feels.
Yeah, and I want to get to nutrition later on. We're going to talk about nutrition and stuff, so I want to hear exactly what you got down, how many carbs and stuff, but we'll get there later on. Julian kicked off the week with a 30K long run on a Monday. Untraditional.
Yeah. Got outside the norm. I was sick on Sunday still. I wasn't that sick, but I was just a bit... like gross, and it was bloody hot, so I decided to push my long run to Monday. We're around 30K from the house in Anglesey at my parents' house where I grew up. Ran out along the coast on the cliff trail through the bush. Bloody nice run, like probably one of the best long runs you'll ever do. But I forgot how hilly it got towards the end. Like I went an hour out. Oh, no, sorry, 15K out, 15 back. And it gets hilly out the back, like in the bush. There's a lot of sort of where they do a lot of the mountain biking, so it's real hilly. And I just crept up on me of how cooked I was getting. And then on the way back, no water, pretty humid and hot. And it was just one of those long runs where you need the end. Like my heart rate was just staying really high. I'd go up a hill, it would just max out. It was a brutal run. So because of that, I took Tuesday pretty easy. Just went out with Bree in the morning. She had a great run, actually. She did like a hilly fartlek, and then she was dropping me up the hills as I jogged along. So that was fun. Wednesday, I again, just running easy. So I was still pretty beat from the weekend. Basically, the heat, the sickness, and then Monday's run just messed me up. So I was just paying it a little bit more care. Thursday, I had a good session. Maybe I was a bit fresher because I didn't do anything the 2 days before it, but I did another progression from what I did the other week where I ran 600 meters at sort of goal race pace and then floated 400. And I did 5 reps of that. And came out at 15:09, which was through 5K. But Charlie, one of the guys that I run with, he was taking us through, and he sort of slowed down on one of the ons by about 5 seconds, so it was a little slow. And so I tried to make that up in the rest period. So I ran the rest period way harder. And I ended up like around about, that was about the third rep. So 4 and 5 were pretty tough after that. But I finished feeling really good. Like, to me, that was one of the best workouts I've ever done. And it's sort of indicating pretty good 5K shape, I reckon. I reckon I'll probably in PB shape. So that's still aiming for Melbourne Uni 5K. Just a bit of jogging Friday. On Saturday morning, had a bit of a team workout down in Vic Park. Watto's training for the 50K at Canberra, and he had this one last workout before he went overseas for a couple of weeks to holiday to Sri Lanka. So he wanted a big send-off workout. So he did 25K at 3. Well, he did it 3:26s. We were supposed to go 3:30s. And we had a couple of helpers. Dolce was in there. He did 14K of the workout. Berkey did a few K. Collis came and did 10K and then did a workout, then joined us for more at the end. And we had Mona and Joshy Paps on the bike helping us with traffic and giving Ash drinks. So that was all on the road, and it was pretty comfortable. Ash nailed it, got to 25, no dramas. I pulled out at 20 because it just started to feel a little grump, like uncomfortable, and I knew I had a pretty big run the next day, so I gave myself a bit of an out there and took it. And then on Sunday, did a long run. I'm taking a bit of Sean Crichton advice here, and I'm running at 30 minimum every Sunday. I reckon that'll help for the later in the year. So I'm making sure I get 30 every week now. So it was a bit of a cheat mileage week because I did 2 long runs in it. So 174, and yeah, just this coming week I'll look forward to doing a couple of fast, like, good workouts.
When's this 5K?
Feb 27.
Oh, plenty of time.
Yeah.
Break 14 minutes, won't you?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about getting the Comm Games qualified. 13, 20. Nah.
Got one before, mate. We'll get another one, eh?
Yeah. I'm that late chance. I booked my tickets to the qualifying event. What's that on the Gold Coast? I think there'll be a good pack, hopefully, at Melbourne Uni, and we can run around 14:20 or so.
Got to be the easiest place in the world to train Ballarat, doesn't it, Brad? Look at the support you get when you're trying to bang out your tempos down there.
How cool would that be to just, like, so Watto's out there doing his 25K or whatever, and Mono rocks up on the bike, and Collis comes, oh, I'll help you for a bit, and then you've got Moose, the 218 man. Like, it'd be pretty cool.
I'm so jealous.
He basically stitched up Collis because he sent him a message the night before, said, oh, yeah, we're just going to meet at Vic Park for our run. No details, anything. Collis rocks up in his training gear, like T-shirt, big heavy shoes, and Ash is like, oh, yeah, we're doing this tempo. And he didn't even really ask him, kind of said, I thought you might be able to jump in. I'm like, oh, yeah, we'll help out. And the joke on Sunday was, geez, haven't our careers gone to shit when we're helping Watto out on his tempo?
Yeah, it wasn't like a ridiculously fast-paced tempo. We got 3:30s.
The great hope to go under 2:10 is now helping out Ash Watto for his 50K race tempo.
his result at Comrades was pretty phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, he's a good runner for sure. Yeah. It's just funny. We just make a joke of it. It's good banter, especially on Sundays after it.
I do like your track session was really good. Like, to run that pace and, like, float that quick, because once you, like, to be able to sort of, I guess, clear a bit of lactic and keep going, because, yeah, you're not dawdling on those floats. So that is a really good sign.
Yeah, well, that was the goal, is to keep them around 76. I didn't, like, there was a couple of slow ones. We'll blame Charlie for that. But if I had it a bit, did it a bit more even, it'd be better.
Just running 600 metre reps at sort of, you know, 143 to 145 off, you know, a minute and a half, just standing recovery is a good session. So to be doing those off 400, you know, quick float is really good.
Yeah, and this one really gets you in the mindset of being able to run a 5K, because you were running a 5K essentially.
Yeah.
And you know the different pains out there, you know the different stages of the race, and like, I'm super confident I can nearly run those laps without the floats. We'll see. With a pack.
It's really just a variation on Deke's quarters in a way. It's the same sort of feel.
Yeah,
that's good.
Very good.
Good stuff. My week was a pretty easy start to it. I had that 5x5K last Sunday, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was all easy jogging for me just to make sure I got over it. Thursday, I did Montefartlek, and after getting into Brad on Strava on a Wednesday night, because he went for a bit longer than 20 minutes, I also stuffed my Montefartlek up and went for a bit longer than 20 minutes, but felt amazing when I warmed up. I think I was running like 4:10s and a 4:06. It's just looking at Strava now, and that's pretty rare for me to be running low 4 minutes for a warm-up, so I was feeling good. Went out and just did it with my stopwatch face on. I want to ask you boys how you guys do it. So I just went on a stopwatch face, and then every time I finished an effort, I hit lap, and it took me back to zero. So went hard for 90 seconds, hit lap, floated for 90 seconds, lap again, 90 seconds. You get the gist. But because I was hitting it every time, and it might have been like 90.6 seconds or 90.5 or whatever, all those half seconds were adding up, and then I got to the end of it, and I was 15 seconds over. But average 302s, 6.7K for 20 minutes and 15 or 17 seconds or whatever, but probably more about a 6.6K, which would be a PB for Montefartlek. So I felt good. Put on the 4%ers, a brand new pair, thanks to Julian, which, just felt amazing. After running in my old ones for so long and doing Hobart half in and Berlin, like, these ones just felt like a completely different pair of shoes on my feet, and, it gave it a bit of a push, but, definitely I think I kept in fourth gear. I don't think I bottomed out too much. I kept telling myself, if you had to go harder, could you? And I, was answering with yes most of the time, so that was me Thursday.
Just cut in.
Go for it.
Who had the better fart? Who finished further after 20 minutes? I want to know this.
Oh, me. I smashed Brad.
Did you?
Probably would have. Yeah.
Because even though I went for like 10 seconds extra than him, I was still running three. I think I averaged 302s and he averaged 305s. But I didn't do mine at 6 o'clock in the morning. Like, I was, 6 p.m. I was feeling good. Warm night, but not too hot. And another good thing was that cool change came through. And, that just made me feel amazing last week with the running. Mind you, I was out in the industrial estate, so that's probably short as well.
Yeah, I didn't have 4%ers on either.
Yeah, and I had a brand spanking pair of four. I'm excited. I've put them literally in my suitcase, and I'm not putting them on again until I race this weekend. They are on ISO shoes. That was Thursday. Friday, easy jogging. I actually woke up Friday, had a bit of a sore throat. Not sure if you guys can hear that I sound a bit huskier. I've kind of just had a dry throat for the last couple of days. So initially I was going to do a 12K tempo on the Saturday morning, but just rang my coach in the morning. We spoke about probably just putting that back a day. So it was one of those ones where Friday, when I swallowed it, really was sore in my throat, whereas Sunday and Saturday it just felt dry, so I wasn't too worried about it. So Sunday my purpose was to do a 12K tempo in between 38 and 39 minutes were the instructions, but practice getting gels and drinks down. So I got 60 grams worth of carbs down in 40 minutes, which is kind of right on that 90 grams an hour. An average 3:10s, which felt good, and heart rate about 166, so a nice little hit out, a bit quicker than marathon pace a week out from race day, and about 130K a week for me, so obviously we kicked things back about 50K as per usual the last couple of weeks. So, looking forward to getting to Japan this week and having a crack at a marathon.
Cool.
Yeah, it was
so good. That tempo.
Marathon pace 3:10s.
Nah. What were the guidelines before you started it?
In between 38 and 39 minutes, stay in control with the instructions. And I just looked at my my stopwatch. I had my lap time and my lap pace, so I didn't actually know what I was hitting overall. And went out probably a bit too fast early, but we planned 305. For 3:05. Yeah,
3:05.
I said I'd try to run 3:15. I stood on that start line going, I'm going to try to run 3:15 here. Let's just go through a nice 3:15. Beep, 3:05. I'm like, got to really learn to settle. And Japan's going to be bad for me, because isn't that how they race? They just go out crazy as well.
Yeah.
I'll be sacked. Yeah, I'll go through in 14:50.
So is the idea to run marathon pace during this workout?
Nah, not at all. No, definitely not. No, quicker. Richard usually gets me to do something quicker the week before, and I think his thinking is just to go a bit quicker, so then when I drop back to marathon pace, it feels super easy. But this was almost a bit of a rehearsal to try and get some gels and drinks down. So from 5K, at 5K I had 200ml of sports drink and half a gel, and then I kept running with that gel in my hand, and at 10K I had the rest of the gel and picked up another 200ml of sports drink. So for the last 6K I ran with a bottle in my hand and a gel in my hand. So it was, a bit like a Sunday picnic out there. There was bottles and gels and stuff going everywhere. But it was good.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Question about your mono. Why don't you have that set up in your watch so that it, basically beeps every 90 seconds and then stops at 20 minutes?
Yeah, I've got to figure out how to do that. People have been, I've just never got around to set it up.
Garmin Connect. Yeah. Set up a workout and then send it to your watch.
It is just so much easier to run it with that in it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it would be. And you got to keep looking down. Yeah, you got to keep looking down. Even my last 15-second one, I end up doing it for 20 seconds just because if you don't look down, you're just constantly looking down at your wrist to see when you got to stop.
Yeah, and then you never get 20 minutes because you're never going to hit lap exactly on 90 seconds or 1 minute or whatever.
Mm.
So the reason mine went over 20 minutes was because my old watch, when I used to have a workout in it, as soon as the workout finished, the stopwatch stopped. And my new watch, it just keeps rolling until you actually press stop. So I finish the session and then I'm like, oh, shit, it's still going. So then I go press stop. So yeah, that's the reason why mine goes long.
Yeah. No, I might do that next time because I felt a bit ripped off. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's just like an official, unofficial monofartlek PB. Yet I'm not sure the correct distance. Okay, let's move on to some news. And Julian, something came across your desk this morning, and it's a bit of an interesting story, this one. It's a bit of an exclusive that we got for the podcast, and it's quite an in-depth story. So hang on and listen to this one. Julian, over to you.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting story, and it's something that we don't see a lot of in Australian athletics. It relates to a doping ban of an Australian runner. So I'll just explain the story, how it's gone so far, basically provide a bit of a narrative on it. But last night, sitting in, actually 2 nights ago, this has been a post-podcast record because we had to get some more details before we recorded it. So 2 nights ago, Bree received a text message from one of her friends with a link to a website called the Athletics Integrity Unit, which basically is an organisation that tries to stamp out doping and corruption in sport. And by doing that, they post a current list of athletes who are serving doping bans. And there were two Australian athletes on the list. One of them we knew already about, so I don't think a lot of people know, but it is an athlete, Sarah Klein, who ran the marathon for Australia in the Beijing World Championships. She's serving a 2-year doping ban. Oh, well, it's a non-doping violation, which means that the official reason for her ban or her violation was failure to submit a drug sample. And this happened, I think it was 2017 early, and she's been banned for 2 years for by ASADA. It also features on ASADA's website as well. So this is public knowledge. There weren't any media releases or any announcements by Athletics Australia or anything like that. So it slid somewhat under the radar. I thought it was surprising that we're pretty heavily involved in athletics and only found out through our own investigations, basically.
Just to jump in, though, because our investigations were pretty basic. Like, you just type her name into ASADA and it's been listed on there for months.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. That's
And anybody could access that, yeah. But it seems like nobody has.
So. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that we weren't doing any like deep documentary work there. It was just, yeah, it was common knowledge on the ASADA website. And, yeah, that's a basic kind of fact, that one.
Yeah, well, it's on the ASADA website. And if anybody wanted to know about it or wants to know about it, they can go on and have a read. But the second athlete on the Athletics Integrity Unit website was Cassie Feen, an Australian runner, very high profile. Cassie's won 2 City to Surf fun runs, probably the biggest fun run in Australia. She's represented Australia 3 times at World Half Marathon Championships, and she's won the Gold Coast Half Marathon. So this is a really high profile athlete, and it's mentions that she's serving a 9-month ban for taking a banned substance called hygenamine. She was tested positive on the April 20, and she's serving a 9-month ban, ready to compete, I think it is on the 5th of May, she's allowed to compete again in 2018. So this one really shocked everyone. Not a single person that I had spoken to was aware of this ban, and I asked some pretty deep runners in the athletics world. So people that should be knowing about these things had no idea whatsoever. So we did, further to seeing her name on there, we were a little bit cautious about that, given that we didn't really know what this website was or this organization was. So as much as we're not journalists, let's make that loud and clear, we are not journalists. So our investigation is, let's Google Cassie Feen doping, nothing. Let's go on to ASADA's website, search for Cassie Feen, nothing. Can't find any media releases. She's not on a list of athletes. Basically, there's no sign of her there. So our first thoughts are, well, is this legit? Because ASADA's not saying anything. Athletics Australia is not saying a single thing. And one website has it on there. And they spelled her name wrong. So it was a little bit dodgy. So the first thing that I did was ask around a little bit. No one had heard of it. Again, this sort of suggested, like, if no one has heard about this, that maybe it's not actually legitimate and this website's a bit of bullshit.
Well, and that's another thing. One of the first things we did was not release the show in the first place, and that's why it's coming out a bit late this week, because we wanted to, probably go a bit deeper into this story, which is, something we probably don't get into too much because we're usually bringing the banter and having a good laugh, but we thought with this matter we really should clarify a few things before we put it out there.
Yeah, and we won't be in the future because I don't have time for this stuff.
This has been a heavy couple of days for us.
Yeah, but so I shot an email to ASADA seeking clarification on the status of Cassie as an athlete, whether she's allowed to compete at the moment, whether she's serving any sanctions. And I also asked, why is she appearing on this list if she is serving a sanction and not appearing on ASADA's website in any shape or form? They didn't reply to me, so I messaged Cassie through Facebook. It's probably not the most professional way, but it's the only way I knew how to get in contact with her. And she replied to my message, and I'm just going to read it out because she's happy for me to read it out. I've asked her, and we offered Cassie to come on the show and discuss it, but this has hit Cassie pretty hard, and I think she potentially may at some point, but at the moment she's still struggling with this situation. So this is her response to me asking about the situation. ASADA called me today letting me know of your request. They are going to post details on their website tomorrow. Long story short, it's been a horrible couple of months for me. I had a routine out of competition test last year. My sample came back with a substance called hygenamine. None of my supplements I listed had this labeled on the ingredients, but further investigation from an ASADA scientist found that one of my substances I had taken was contaminated.
Unintentional use normally comes with a 2 years ban. However, ASADA reduced mine to 9 months, saying there was no significant fault or negligence on my behalf. So that's a fair bombshell, really. Clearly, Cassie's not dumping masses of EPO or growth hormone or steroids into her system. Everyone, I think, accepts, like ASADA accepts, Athletics Australia accepts that this is an unintentional use. Once we found out what the substance was, we had a bit of a look into it further. It's a natural substance, so it's an extract from a plant, and it provides a fat burning benefit. So you'll find it in pre-workout supplements, and also fat burning supplements. Like the most popular one is OxyBurn, which a lot of like maybe bodybuilders or fitness people take. I'm not sure how many runners take it. I wasn't aware that runners would take that stuff, but clearly they do. And so further after that, I asked a few more questions of Cassie. She said ASADA will publish something. My main question centered around why did ASADA never tell anybody anything about this or publish anything? And will you be taking legal proceedings against the company that provided this supplement and not listed the proper ingredients? And she said that ASADA will publish something. They were going to do it in a couple of weeks, so they give me notice, but the Athletics Integrity site took them by surprise, so they'll put something out tomorrow. The products had all natural ingredients listed. A fruit extract turned out to be hygienamine, so technically I can't take legal action. I just want this to be over and done with so I can get back to doing what I love to do. So basically ASADA, like the way I'm reading this is that ASADA are sympathizing with Cassie and they didn't want this to be a public matter and to see her name dragged through the mud, because it's a little coincidental that an email, the first probably email or inquiry about it, has spurred the media release that they released this evening on the 7th of February about Cassie Fien's ban. So if anyone wants to go through the ASADA website, they will find a search for Cassie Fien. They'll find the media release. Not sure whether this gets sent to actual reporting, like newspapers or to the media or not, or whether you have to search for it, but it is on their website now. It does support her story about taking it accidentally. It named the supplement as Lipo Rush, and it also mentions that this particular banned substance can be named several different ways, so it's very confusing. So Cassie sort of goes on to mention that she's taking this very hard. It's sort of rocked her world. She's had to take some time off work, and she's had to, she's maybe had some mental health issues surrounding it. So I had a bit of a think about this one today, and really Cassie's not too much further down the track than what's Brady and myself are running. I think she's made teams that we haven't, and she's won a few more races than we have. So she's just that little next step up. But this would be very easy to happen to a lot of people. I think she's almost like a little bit I feel very sorry for the way this has happened, because these sort of supplements you can find in pharmacies, chemist warehouse, all those places where you would go in and buy a protein powder. And if she's checked the ingredients list for the banned substance and it's not on the ingredients list, it's hard to know what else she can do. I feel sorry for her. I think to be put on I almost respect the ASADA's call to not release any information on this, given that she unintentionally took something that wasn't even printed on the product that she was taking. How do you guys feel about that?
It sounds like you're feeling bad about emailing Asada now.
No, I'm not. No. I'm feeling bad for Cassie.
Yeah.
Like I think if someone gets a doping sanction in the country, we need to know about it. Competitors need to know about it. Races need to as well. Mm. And Asada can't just be sweeping this under the carpet like they've tried to do, which yeah. is like they've tried to sort of say, hey, let's just hush this. You'll go through your ban. Don't tell anyone. We won't tell anyone. And then you'll be racing and no one knows. And this makes me question, what other athlete has this happened to? Anyone else who's just gone off with a long-term injury and come back? Like, if this has happened to Cassie, like, have they done this with other athletes in the past?
Well, I wonder what would have happened if you didn't email Asada. Would have they made a statement, do you reckon, or not? And I guess my other question is, at what point should, say, somebody like AA make an announcement about athletes that have represented the country being on bans? Should they do it for every athlete that's represented? So at what level? Just ones that have represented nationally?
Well, that is I would say that if someone, like, there's not that many athletes testing positive, surely, and it wouldn't be that hard to put out an easy little media release as they've done today at the time of the imposing the ban. Like, I wouldn't be releasing it early, but once there's a ban placed, there's been an acceptance either of guilt from the athlete or a decision made on whether that athlete suffers is hit with a penalty or not. And that's the time to release the information.
Yeah, and I guess the athletes that are getting tested have to be at a certain level anyway. You know, like, we're not getting tested.
That's right, yeah. So I wonder how many times Cassie's been tested in the past and whether, like, this was one of the first out of competitions that she would have had.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, well summarised, well said, Julian, and yeah, well done covering all that. Mm. It's difficult territory sometimes when you're dealing with people at this level and facts and opinions and, yeah, trying to put it all together pull it together for an audience. It really worries me, as you said, about you guys have watched the documentaries on Netflix and seen the ones about different training groups over in the States and stuff, and it just seems like it's a bit of a shambles, the whole process and what gets reported on and what doesn't get, what's on one website and not another website, and this is all for a tiny kind of performance enhancing drug in a way. I can imagine the big EPO stuff that could be influencing other athletes at a different level.
Yeah, what does reassure me is that the Sarah Klein ban, non-doping violation. So they're not saying that she took anything illegal, right? And with Cassie's ban, this is not her willingly doping to get better. So, like, there's going to be heaps of people who come out and say, oh, you've got to know what you're putting in your body. She's at a level, she should be scrutinizing everything, and if it's 50-50 or if she doesn't know what the things are on the back, don't take it. But she probably, like, she probably doesn't, like, get either the training from AA or from Asada to deal with that, or she may not ever have been at this level before where it's been an issue. Like, she's not a bloody NBA player earning $20 million a game where, yeah, don't take the supplement. That's good. Like, she's a PTI in the Air Force, so she does fit for a job. Like, yeah, this is it's not like we've exposed two bloody EPO cheats. We've just maybe hit on two girls that have come out of this really unluckily.
Yeah, and, like, when people say you have to know what you're putting into your body, well, if you read, like, it sounds like she read the packaging and, you know, the drug that she tested positive for wasn't even on the packaging. So what can you do?
There's not much more you can do.
Listed under natural products.
Yeah, yeah.
That should be the, yeah.
There's a lot of learning in this story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for everyone. I'm glad this is out, and I'm glad Cassie's been able to sort of set the story straight, because there's a lot of people out there who will just look at this and go, oh, doping ban, oh, doper, and not even give it a second thought. So I really think we should respect both athletes.
And hopefully we can have her on for, well covered, Julian.
Well covered, Moose.
Oh, mate, I honestly, I'm just glad I went straight to Cassie and didn't ask other people and just didn't get third or fourth opinions on it. And I'm glad that we left it a day or so. I'm glad we left it a day or so to get it set straight.
Yeah, and hats off to her for responding, and hopefully we can interview her whenever she's happy to come on for a chat.
Yeah,
let's move on, boys. Next bit of news for the night. Mary Kitaney, using male pacemakers for Paula Radcliffe's mixed record. Go.
I just want one record. There shouldn't be two records. This sucks. Like, who wants to go, oh, but that was the mixed record, what's the gender record, blah, blah, blah. Like, just one record so we don't. And then if you, like, okay, they didn't take her world record away, but if you looked in the record books now, there'll be, like, what do you call those little stars on it?
Yeah, asterisks they're called.
Asterisks, that's right, yeah. So there's going to be an asterisk after, like, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a very tough one. I would prefer them, like, obviously a gender-specific record is the most natural and the cleanest, but she's already run this. Like, Radcliffe's run the race, and I know it could, yeah.
Okay.
I agree with you, Moose. It's not like cycling where having pace where you just get dragged along. Like, yes, it helps, but you still have to run it. And I just think if you run the distance in that time, that's the record.
I agree. Like, what are they going to start saying? No gels. They're going to start you're not allowed to have sugar. It has to be a certain bloody temperature to run it. Like,
Next thing for the men, they'll start having, you know, non-paced record. Like, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, this is bullshit. I would just, like, she's run the time. When she ran it, it was legit, official. There should be no asterisks. It should just be a general world record. Yeah, there was a guy in the race. I mean, on the track it's different, but it, for the marathon, like, it was part of racing for so long. You don't want to take it away.
Yep, great.
Yeah, right. So Kitaney's got the women's only course world record with 2:17.01, which she did in London this year, whereas she's going for Radcliffe's 2:15.25, which has stood for 15 years, but she had a male pacemaker.
Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
That's correct. But you're saying that Radcliffe's time shouldn't have the asterisk. That should be the official one.
Yeah. It should just be 2:15.25 for the women's.
Like it always was. Yeah.
And let them have male pacemakers every race.
Yeah, if they want, yep.
It's always been that way.
Well, it's not legit, though, because men can't have pacemakers the whole way because no men can go with the pacemakers. No men can go with Eliud Kipchoge that long.
But they still go a fair way.
Yeah, but not. Well, I listened to a conversation about this. It was on Marathon Talk. It was really good. They pretty much said, how many men are out there who can run 2:15.25? Like, hundreds, thousands, Kenyans. Like, there's a stack of people who can go out there and help Mary Kitaney get this world record. How many humans are there on Earth who can go out and help Eliud Kipchoge run 2:02.57?
But why is this an issue
why should the
when we're talking about the women?
Yeah, but do you think that's then changing, like, the rules of, like, competition?
They're not competing against the men. And their records are two different records. So it's not like Kitaney's trying to take Kipchoge's record.
Yeah, I know she's not trying to take his record. But
that's what I'm saying.
Like, how you can get a record.
That's just a inconvenience for the men. That should all that it's be. It shouldn't, like, just because a man can't get a pacemaker doesn't mean a lady shouldn't in the same race.
A different gender pacemaker. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I get it. I just think it's been going on for so long. Like, Paula Radcliffe run that race with the record. Everyone appreciated what it was, that it was like a world record at the time, and I feel like having two world records going at once is not good for anything.
Mm. And you reckon it's okay to stick with a male pace record, not just keep the female-only one?
Well, every female in the world could have access to it. Like, there's six other Kenyan girls that could do it if they wanted. It's not like the rule's just for her and not for someone else.
Yeah, what about London Marathon, though? Like, say there's like a, you know, Lisa Waitman or someone who wants to run 2:24, like, do they organise a male pacemaker to hook her through, or is it just for the person going for the world record?
Well, if she's in the race, if Lisa's in the race and wants to run with a pacemaker, she goes with a pacemaker. Like, that's how it would work.
Do you think they'd organise male pacemakers for her, though?
Well, if it's the pacemaker is there for the front lady, like, I don't see why you would need pacemakers for anything less than the front lady.
Hmm. Berlin, they got different groups, though, don't they? They got, but that's male for male, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It is confusing, though. I don't like it too much. Too many asterisks and stuff.
Yeah, just one record. Like, how confusing can we get?
Do you reckon it's a good spectacle, though? In a race with men out there pacing, like, does it take the racing away and makes it more about times?
There's two different things. Like, there's two different spectacles. It was great to watch Kipchoge try to run 2 hours at his breaking two, and it was also great to watch the Olympic marathon. Like, they're two different. They're both great running races. One of them, you're watching an amazing feat, and two, the second time you're watching an amazing race. So I appreciate both forms of events. I think it can get a little boring when, like, there's not enough good guys that can go with the pacer, and it's just one guy and he's off by anyway, and you're like, it gets so strung out that there's not a single lick of racing. But imagine if you had three or four guys, like Berlin was supposed to be, on that pacing to a world record, like, that would be cool. And it was cool. It built the hype, and everyone was pretty excited for that.
Well, that's what London's going to turn into, though, isn't it? Just going to be Kitani with, like, two male pacemakers, and then the rest of the field's racing 3 minutes behind her? Like, is anyone else going to go out at 2:15 pace?
Well, I mean, no one did with Paula. It was still rad to watch.
Yeah, yeah, but you're right. It's like that becomes like an expedition kind of a show. Can they get the world record rather than focusing on the race, because that's a 3 or 4 minutes behind.
A different form of entertainment. For us, it's a different form of entertainment.
Which could be a good thing. Maybe that's the way things are going.
I was watching Mary Kitani last year. It was awesome to watch her go out hard and, like, really put it on the line.
Well, she kind of needed it because the pace had dropped out pretty early last year. Then she was a sitting duck, which made things interesting.
Yeah.
And also, if you look at the depth of female, like, half marathoners at the moment, like, I'm sure there's other girls that could actually, you know, have a crack and go out with Kitani. Like that, was it Houston where all those girls ran, like, super quick over the half?
Yeah, 66.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sure there's other girls that would actually be keen to have a crack as well.
Yeah.
Just not sure whether they're on the start list for London.
A few 64 and 65 girls getting around as well. It's pretty competitive. Yeah. Next bit of news, boys.
Good.
We got, what do we got next? Here we go.
What about half marathon yesterday?
Oh, yeah, that was on the top of our list. How do we skip past that?
Yeah.
Brad, your man, no. Chris Hamer, 62:29.
Yeah. Such a good result. I'm actually sitting in the chair that he sat in to do the interview. Hopefully some of his speed rubs off.
Don't get off that chair until it's late BY, I don't reckon, to stay on there.
But supposedly conditions were horrendous too.
Yeah, snowing.
It was snowing. Yeah.
That's what makes it even better.
Yeah, yeah. So he ran 62:29. Jack Colarebi was 65:05, and Jess Trengrove was fourth in the women's. Jess Trengove was 70:59 for fourth place.
I love how you got your last name right there. We have been under the pump for stuffing that up, so apologies to Jess the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He can win the Commonwealth Games gold medal. He will win it. Mark my words. You heard your first Inside Running episode number 14. He'll win it.
Hmm. Righto.
do you want to put a slab on it?
Yeah, yep.
I know he'll win it. He'll win. Oh, yeah, hang on. Hawkins from Scotland, he might stitch a few of the boys up, but I reckon he'll be the best Australian off that run.
The best Australian. Yeah. That's a, yeah. Okay.
Looks like the Moose is going to clean up with the beer here, because I bet him a case about that American, was it Gwen Jorgensen?
Oh, Jorgensen, yeah.
Yeah, so we had a case on that, and now you've just maybe won a case on the Commonwealth Games marathon.
I'm getting so excited about the Commonwealth Games marathon. Like, yeah. Those three females and three males are, like, amazing chances.
No, I'm getting excited for the national selection trials, 1500 metres. That's what I'm getting excited for. Jordan Guzman versus Gregson, Matthews, Geordie Williams,
Jeff Risley.
Risley, yeah, and then like whether Sam McEntee runs, I'm not sure, but there'll be some big names in that race, and that will be very interesting. But another day for that. But.
It's an exciting time. And Jess was fourth. Did you say she was fourth, Brad? That's a pretty deep field to come fourth. PB as well.
Yeah.
She's running well. She'll win the gold as well, I reckon. Hamer and Jess both get the golds.
Let's hope so.
What about you're forgetting the girl, the lady with the best PB in the race
so far?
I'm forgetting everyone. She has the biggest claims to that favourite tag.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in coming weeks. We've still got about 2 months until that comes down. 2 or 3 months?
April
15, isn't it?
Yeah, anything can happen between now and then. A few questions about nutrition today, boys. Who wants to read one of these ones out?
You read the first one.
Go for it.
So Etienne Bloomstein-Jones, who I've done a few runs with over the last couple of weeks, his question was, how do you plan eating in your day to make sure you get enough calories in when you guys are doing big Ks? And did you want to read that second question, Brady, and we'll sort of maybe put them together?
Yeah, William asked me on, I think it was Instagram. He said, hey, Brady Truffle, I saw your hashtag clean eating on your Instagram. Can you guys also comment on what the diet is like during the week during inside running? Doesn't have to be every week. Bit of a funny story about that hashtag. The boys I was rooming with at Falls Creek about 5 years ago, we thought it was a good idea to put clean eating as a hashtag on Instagram, because you get like a stack of like likes really quick, and it was just this lame joke that we just kept doing for about 5 years. So to answer your question, William, that's why we use that hashtag, because there's about three people who actually understand that joke. It's not a fantastic one, but it's a good joke for Zacha and Hamish Beaumont and a few of those guys. Good one,
all right, well, I'll kick off my day. So generally it's coffee to start with before my run, and then I go for a run. If I'm doing a session, I'll have coffee and a couple of pieces of toast. If it's just an easy run, I'll just have the coffee. Come home. Breakfast for me is normally, say, I don't know, 6 Weet-Bix with some banana, some peanuts, some blueberries on top, and maybe like a half a scoop of some whey protein powder. And then that gets me through to a morning tea, and I'll have a tea and milk arrowroots or something. And then lunch varies. It could be a couple of sandwiches or leftovers from the night before. And then dinner, depends, summer will be fish and salad or chicken and salad. But the big thing for me, I guess, is eating around training time. So if I finish a session, I make sure that I get my 20 grams of protein in straight after and 60 grams of carbs within the first half an hour. And also, if I have a big Sunday run, I'll make sure that I load up a little bit more on the Saturday afternoon and Saturday night. So it's more about, I guess, making sure that I eat lots before and after big sessions, and then obviously a little bit less on the days that I'd take it a little bit easier. So that's me in a nutshell, I suppose.
What are you weighing in at, Brad?
About 50, just under 59. That's pretty light for me. It's probably the lightest I've been in a long time.
Yeah, you're always pretty. You always look fit, though. What about before Berlin Marathon? Brad looked the fittest out of the three of us. He'd been injured for like 3 months.
Yeah, you'll always take that. You always that tag.
Yeah, he loves that. Yeah, good. What about you, Julian? What's a day of eating look like?
Yes, I have a coffee before I run, and then When I come back, I'll either have a big bowl of porridge with protein powder or a big smoothie with protein powder and some bananas and stuff. So try to eat a lot just after my first run. Get to work, maybe have a bagel with some cream cheese on it and then another coffee. And for lunch, if I've got a big workout on, I try to have lunch. It depends how busy we are, but I try not to have lunch like after 1:30. So make sure I have something big earlier to let it go down a little bit. And it'll just be a sandwich. But always early on the days that I know I've got a workout on, so I don't want it to affect me much. So say if I'm doing the workout at 6, I won't have anything big after 2 to 2:30. I'll just have maybe a bit of toast later with banana and honey. That'll be about it. And then following the workout, try to have dinner pretty quickly. So within an hour. That's me. I'm pretty straightforward. Every day is no different.
Yeah, I'm pretty straightforward as well in my routine. Same thing. When I'm working, I don't eat before I run, kind of get up and go straight out the door. But when I get home, kind of bowl of oats with the nuts and seeds and dried fruit and a bit of protein powder, milk, and a few bits of toast, maybe sometimes a few bits of toast with peanut butter or avocado on it. I have our kids have lunch at school at 11 o'clock, so I have lunch at 11 o'clock and a piece of fruit before then at maybe 10, and then have lunch, which is usually just like leftovers or, I don't know, it depends what I've had for dinner the night before, maybe a bit of salad, a bit of veggies, whatever, and then, yeah, dinner, it's just, I don't know, it's a hard question, this one. I can never think about what we have. Burrito bowls, that's a pretty regular one at our place, like the rice and the kidney beans and lentils and guacamole, that's always a good one. But yeah, just try to eat clean foods, which leads me to this other thing. I spoke about it last week. I had this lab test, and I just sent it through to you boys, and they give me some pretty big recommendations to try and get 9. I don't think it's in that actual report. I think it's in a different email that I haven't sent to you boys, but they've asked me to try and do, or recommended that I go for 900 carbs per day on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before my marathon this weekend. And then go for 90 grams of carbs per hour for the first 2 hours of the race, which I'd start doing a bit of Googling. That's a lot of carbs and it's a lot of food. So to put that into perspective, like 100 grams of pasta, which would be, you know, a medium kind of bowl, is about 60 grams of carbs. Cliff bars are 40. A liter of Gatorade was like maybe 50 or something. A gel is about 25, 30. So it's going to be quite challenging trying to get that many carbs in for 3 days.
Yeah, it sounds gross, to be honest.
And it's just crap food too, like it's processed sugar and like I hardly eat sugar as it is in that form.
I actually think you'll struggle to get 900 grams, but you'll feel so bad. My dietitian mate told me generally you work off about 10 grams per kilo of body weight, so... That would be like for me and you, like 570 to 600 type thing. So to be, you know, doing another half of that again is a lot. But be interested to see how you go with it if you decide to do it.
Probably get to the start line weighing like 75 kilos or something.
It's a lot of sushi rolls.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be too bad because I'm in the air all day Friday, so I'm just thinking of having my backpack packed full of snacks and sports drink and stuff like that, so I can get away with Thursday, Friday. I'm not sure what I'm going to do Saturday when I'm in Japan, though. That could be, a bit of sushi.
But they do noodle dishes, rice dishes, tons of.
Yeah, right. But the report come back pretty evident that I was burning quite a lot of carbs when I run, even when I kind of jog at an easy pace. So they kind of looked at. When I'm running about 314 a kilometre pace, I burn about 290 carbs an hour, which you're never going to replace that when you're running at that pace. And then, even when I was running easy, I was burning quite a lot of, or not quite that many, but, quite a few carbs there as well. So the recommendation is to, go for 90, which is a lot, especially if you're getting it with your fluid. Like, I think that day I was doing 300 mils. Every 20 minutes with the carbs mixed in, so nearly 2 liters over the first 2 hours. What do you boys do? I know we've had this conversation before, but like, yeah, I've never paid attention to this stuff before, which is probably why I bomb out so much. But yeah, what do you do in Berlin, Julian? How many carbs?
Not many, because I missed two of my gels. But as an example, like I try to work off two gels an hour. That's what I work off, which is 60 grams, which is 50 to 60 grams of carb an hour. And I think that's pretty safe. Like, there's so much risk involved. It's like pushing and pushing it to the knife's edge, and you go over and that's you fucked for the day. So you go over a little bit, you're not coming back from it. So you can't be anywhere near that tip, that knife's edge. You've got to be well on the other side of it. There's a lot more things that go wrong from taking too much than there is from not quite enough.
And you mean like spewing or getting the runs and stuff? Is that what you're talking about?
I mean like stomach ache mainly. Like
stitches.
Yes, stomach cramps, possibly the runs, nausea. So nausea, is that a thing?
Nausea.
Yeah. Nausea.
You mean so, vomiting.
All those things are things that go wrong. The thing that might go wrong if you take a little bit less is that you get depleted. But really, like Berlin showed me, I can do a lot less carbs than I thought that I ever could, because I only took 3 on that run and I had the best race I ever had. So there's too much risk involved in going anywhere near the number you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. What do you do, Brad?
Well, we spoke about this the other day after I did that 2x12K, and I find gels, like I'm working on about 60 an hour as well. But what I found on the weekend was I could get down a gel, which was 30 grams with 200 mils of water, a hell of a lot easier than I could get down 200 mils of sports drink, which the sports drink had probably only about 10 to 15 grams of carbs, because the sports drink is just so like sweet and sickly sweet that, you know, if you're drinking that the whole race, I find my mouth just gets all like, you know, you just feel like you need to flush it out with some water all the time. And also said to you that the good thing about the gels now, there's so many different flavors that if you go like a coffee one, a cola one, a vanilla one, a raspberry one, you never feel like you're having the same thing over and over again. So it's a lot. I find the gels are a lot easier to get down. So I think after the weekend, I'm going to can the sports drink and go purely gels with water.
Yeah, that's all I do on a marathon
yeah,
too.
Because I just think you don't get much bang for your buck with the sports drink, and it just makes you feel disgusting in the mouth. Mm. So,
And it feels like it sits in your stomach, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you're getting it down that quick.
So I reckon maybe, yeah, a gel every, say, 25 minutes or so. So then maybe getting just over 60 an hour, something like that. But on the weekend, I would have taken 70 grams of carbs in probably 50 minutes. And then I didn't have anything after that. And like I didn't have an issue with 70 grams in 50 minutes.
That's pretty good, though, isn't it? And then you go for 70 grams in the next 50 minutes. Or like get to an hour, then go 70 from an hour to an hour 50.
Yeah.
Then kick
That's
it
a
home
lot
croaker.
Of carbohydrate, though.
Then kick it home, croaks, I reckon.
We'll see.
Not happy, Moose.
There's a lot of carbohydrate, surely. 70 grams in 50 minutes.
Well, it didn't hurt me on the weekend.
Yeah, I did 60 and 38 on the weekend. I was just having a picnic out there.
Maybe you weren't running long enough, though.
Yeah, true.
But maybe maybe you can get it down for that long.
Doesn't kick in.
But do you have a gel before the start of the marathon?
No.
Mm.
Okay, yeah.
So if you have one on the start line, does that count as the like first hour?
Well, I reckon it does. So if you have one before, then I wouldn't take one at 5K, but I took one at 5 on the weekend.
What's the point in taking one on the start line?
Because your body's kind of like a car with petrol in it, and you got to top up with this car, this glycogen stuff, so you don't run out in the last 20 minutes. That's the thinking.
Dick Telford gets his athletes, well, he did a few years back, taking gels before the start of a 10K.
Yeah, okay. So maybe, like, Yeah. I just feel like at that point, like you haven't used any at all, really. Mm. That's like you're basically starting with a full tank.
That's a you're just loading yeah. it up.
Well, maybe we can get Dick on one day and he can explain it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of different philosophies out there. I don't particularly like taking gel, so if I don't have to, I won't. There are like I do eat chews like in the lead up to the start. Those little gel chews. They're a lot.
Why your tank's full?
Yeah, but you get hungry. So after like no, I'm being serious. Don't make fun of me. No, the
how many calories?
You get hungry though. If you eat for like two hours before, you start getting hungry. So that just keeps that at bay. They got two gels equivalent to one packet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. There's about 60 grams in one packet.
Yeah, right. Hey, last listener question for this week. Ben Pearson, local boy from Echuca Moama, bought a few pairs of shoes off you the other week, didn't you, Julian?
He did come down and get some shoes.
Yep.
Did meet Ben. Yep, made the trip. I think it was a hot day.
It was. It was 44 degrees that day. Nearly got caught in a bushfire coming home.
Had a sausage roll on the way down, if I remember correctly.
Oh, he didn't tell me that, but it wouldn't surprise me. He doesn't mind a snag roll. Good racing tactic question, this one. I'd like to know, when you're in a race, should you save yourself for a finishing kick or burn everyone off with a couple of laps to go?
Oh,
I think it depends on what position you're in here.
There's a lot of depends right here.
Yeah. Depends if you know. So if you know your competition and you know that you've got a better kick than them, then just sit. That would be my advice.
Yes.
So it depends on the situation and who you're racing against, or and whether you back your kick or not.
A good example is Steigen 10K when Julian. Stitch me up going with four laps to go.
Mate, I would have had you in 200, 600, 4K. It wouldn't have mattered.
Knew he couldn't outkick me after that last 200 at Vic State 5K B race, so he had to go early.
I had like a broken spine that day, I remember.
Yeah, here we go. might insert the audio on this at the end of this show.
This depends. The answer depends on who you are. Mm. Like, for instance, in a 5K race, you got a bloke who's coming up from 1,500 metres. That guy's going to hope for a slow race, kick at the end. Whereas you got a 10K guy going down, he's going to want to start the kick. He's going to want to, not a kick really, but a drawn out hard effort to maximise his chances. So depends on the distance, where your strengths are.
I didn't you say once though, Moose, that you prefer to actually kick away early on so you can high five the crowd down the home straight, which you can't do if you leave it to a finishing kick?
Yeah, I like to look back and watch Brady at the 200 mark when I'm at the 100 mark.
Yeah,
just
I should have I seen know, a look, in, look of fear in his face that day, Brad. It was a look of relief when he saw I couldn't pull him in.
That was a smile. That was a taunt.
It's like 3 seconds behind you. I wasn't 100 metres behind you anyway.
Anyway.
We'll meet again one day, wise man. One day we'll meet again. Moose on the loose. Finish it off.
Yeah, let's get into it.
We didn't have an interview. We're gone for 70 minutes already.
Yeah, apparently someone likes to talk about himself. Brad, you might know a few characters like this. Same with Brady. I certainly know a solitary character like this, but there's probably one in every training group. It's the guy who is never satisfied with their efforts, either at training or in a race. And there's a good like way to be never satisfied when you're always searching for more. But then there's like the continually grumpy guy who finishes the race and you come up to him at Berlin Marathon and you look at his face and go, oh no, he's had a shit one. And you say, oh, how'd you go, mate? Oh yeah, I ran 2:35, beat my PB by 4 minutes. I'm bloody 45 years old or however old he is. Big guy too. And I'm like, holy shit, that's amazing. 4 minutes. And he goes, yeah, but I was only 3 or 4 seconds off going under 2:35. And like with this real depressed sort of sad voice. And you're like, no, be happy. This is a happy day. This is a great race. You've just taken 4 minutes off your PB. You run incredible. You basically said that you never thought you'd ever break PB, but you're still this like grumpy at the end. And it's the same. This is Jared. He knows that I'm talking about him, but I'm sure there's others out there. They'll run a workout and they'll run it really well. They'll hit all their splits perfectly and they'll finish and say, oh, that just felt too hard. Like too hard, way out of my league. And then he does the workout next week and he runs it and he hits the splits really easily and he goes, oh, such a pussy out there. I could have gone so much harder. It's just the guy who is never satisfied. That's my beef this week.
Yeah, I like it. What do you reckon, Brad?
Yeah, I agree. But, there's I guess, a good aspect of never being, like, completely satisfied, always wanting more, and it's probably part of human nature, really. I agree with you. Like,
it's a sad life if you can't get excited.
Yeah, a PB means that you have never ever run faster than that in your whole life. So it is something that you should celebrate. So, So, for example, if I ran 2:22 in Lake Biwa, part of me would be disappointed, but then I should be happy because it's a PB. Is that what you're saying, Julian?
No, it's different to you. You could go and run a 50K PB if you wanted. Like, your marathon PB is irrelevant. It's almost like you've never done one before. Mm. It's different.
But it's what you're getting at, though, isn't it? You should always be happy with a PB regardless.
Yeah, basically, or just at least like share some enthusiasm at the end when everyone's had a good race.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, just talking about Brad's marathon time then, because does it get to a stage, and I was talking to a friend about this tonight, I was jogging and we're trying to work out his plan for Wangaratta Marathon in a couple of weeks, and say Brad gets to 36K and feels good and winds it up the last 6K, but then finishes full of running, would he then be disappointed that he didn't go with 8K to go? Or flip that around, does he wait until, or does he go with 8K to go and then he hits a wall at 40K and has to really battle home and loses a whole lot of time over the last 2K and then he's just as disappointed because he went 2K too early?
Well,
you're never going to win
the marathon. Yeah, but the last 2K, they're going to be hard no matter what, so it's pretty rare to finish a race feeling like you've got more to give. Like, if you've got more to give at the end of 42, you're a different sort of cat. No one should be leaving anything out there on the road at the end of a marathon, surely. But if 6K at the end, after already running 35K, 6K hard, that's a bloody hard run, no matter what happens, no matter how slow he's going early. I think it depends, though, on how slow he has gone early. So he would never let himself get to that situation, I don't think.
Yeah,
he's too in tune with, like, if he's at 30K, he'll know how much he has left.
True. Hey, talking about marathon times, Julian's come up with a great idea to have a competition. I guess mine and Brad's marathon time and your 5K time at Melbourne Uni. Tell us a bit about that, Julian.
Yeah, all right. So there'll be a bit of a competition. We'll do it on a Facebook post. We'll put up the post and we'll pin it on their page. And you'll have to put in unedited posts. So your first guess is your last guess. You put in your predicted time for firstly Brady, then for Brad, and then myself. And you basically, it'll be like a monthly competition because everyone goes off at different times. And the winner will be the participant or the poster who has the least amount of accumulative time between the three runners, so off their actual PBs. So say they, Brad runs 2:20, someone guesses 2:21, that's a minute. And then they might have guessed 40 seconds away from Brady's time, a minute 40, and they've guessed 2 seconds off my time. A minute 42 is their score, and the lowest score will win a voucher to the running company Ballarat.
$1,000, I heard.
$1,000 value, but everything in the store costs $1,000 or more.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. You've got to enter by this weekend because I'm running a marathon this Sunday. So no late entries, no averages. You just got to have it all three times locked in.
Well, this episode can go out early.
Yeah, it's got. Yeah. This will go out tomorrow, Tuesday. So they'll have plenty of time to. Yeah, but yeah, you guys have still got a long time till your race. I mean, anything could happen in that time. It's a good competition.
Yeah, that's why you got to nail it.
Yeah. Right. What are you are you going to enter? What are you going to put in?
Oh, I'll enter, yeah.
Give us a ballpark. The wise man throws out an early entry. You can be the first one to enter.
Oh,
shit. Come on, I've got a race this weekend. Give me something to chase.
Brady. Oh. 2:19:42.
Oh, jeez, I'd take that, Brad.
Yeah, I'd take that too.
2:18:50 for Brad. And for me, 13:11. 14.
It's a 5K, isn't it? 5K? Yeah.
14:18. I'm going to go 1 second quicker than my PB just because.
Did you notice he went 2 seconds slower than his PB for the marathon for your predicted time, Brad?
I didn't notice that. No.
He wants to say the top dog on inside running, I reckon he is. He'd be getting a bit worried about you, I reckon.
Be nothing without that.
The old alpha male. All right,
I reckon...
What's your guess, Brad?
No, I'm not going to put it out there yet.
Mate, you won't even log on to Facebook between now and next Sunday.
Probably not.
You're shocking on social media.
I reckon Julian will run faster than that. I reckon he's in sub 14:15 shape.
What about you? Don't have to guess for yourself. Just guess me and Julian's. I just want to hear what you want. What do you reckon I'm going to run on Sunday?
Well, have you checked the weather forecast?
Yep, checked it.
What are we looking at?
We're looking at 12, 40% chance of rain. That's all they're telling me so far. 12 and cloudy, a top of 12.
Any wind?
Can't see. It's not doing that. It says no hourly forecast available at this stage.
Would you get offended if I said 2:20:01?
Nah. Mate, I'm not going to get offended.
It'd be a PB. Can't complain about a PB.
I'm going to go 2:20:01.
2:20:01. Yeah, 26 make sure you.
Yeah. Make sure you dip.
Dip. Yeah, clock will probably be in Japanese numbers or something. I won't even know what I'm dipping at. Yeah, right. Enter that competition. Get over there. Like our Facebook page.
Answer our questions that we have about the doping because we forgot. Like that's what we're. Well, I'm interested in that. Don't worry about Brady's race. Let's talk about the doping.
Oh, come on. Wish me some luck. I need some good vibes leading into this one. What are you gonna say?
Nah, it's all right. Go on.
Good luck. You're a legend. Thanks, Julian. Thanks. Hutchie and Michelle got engaged, two avid listeners of the show. I think they've listened to every single episode of Tell Me Your Tales, The Road to Berlin, and now they're on the inside running every week, and it was pretty exciting news for two listeners on the weekend.
Congrats to them.
Congratulations.
Went out for a run, and didn't he pretend he rolled his ankle and pulled the ring out of the sock?
I have seen the man roll his ankle upwards of 20 times on the runs, so that would be a pretty good sly little move, I reckon.
Congratulations to those guys. Thanks for tuning in every week. We're done, fellas. It's time to go to bed, I reckon. Thanks for joining us again.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck for the weekend.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm coming back Monday. It's going to be like in and out, so we'll be able to get the show out in normal time again next week and go from there.
Is there a live stream of the race?
Yeah, it's on live TV in Japan, but I don't think you're going to find any links at work over here. It's on Fuji TV over there.
All right.
I reckon, though, that Japanese marathon news guy, maybe he might be people's best chance if they want to get any kind of news. But, yeah, it's a long shot. I'll put something
Is there a race website or anything that you can put a link up to?
Yeah, I'll put something up there. I think their Facebook page is probably going to be the main one. They've been putting a few updates up the last couple of weeks. But, I'll bang something on Twitter or maybe the page on Sunday afternoon. Be about 2 o'clock Australian time Sunday, Arvo, and then... yeah, be done by 4:20, hopefully.
Yeah, good luck. I'm excited to see how the short prep goes.
I feel like you've
trained smart for this one. I don't feel like you've left it on the training track. So I think you should go in confident.
Yeah, I gave that a good crack this week, banging a few big sessions. But I'm feeling all right, confident, ready to go, excited. Yeah, looks good. Just got to get there.
Yeah,
should be
good
fun.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Rightio, thanks for joining us again. Over and out for another week.
Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Oh, no.